Blog Talk Radio.
Brought up in South Africa, and a great film about how
people in the service who were captured get their can be brainwashed, and it's happened, and we still think it's going on today. Don't worry, that rumble you hear in the background is they're tearing up the streets. There's nothing I can do about it. It is not the latest rumble of the latest earthquake or shake. We've had four of them already. And then in 1901, this is another women's first, Anna Eason Taylor was the first person and the first woman, I don't know if any other women did this, to go over to Niagara Falls in a barrel. Now, in just a second, I'll have the birthdays. Hang on just a sec. Among, and now getting back to Chile, we have birthdays of Melvin Purvis. He died today. I'm sorry about that. Bernardo O'Hearn, he was one of the founders of modern-day Chile. And he was an illegitimate child. His father was of Irish descent, but was born in Chile and never married his mother, apparently. I think we've got the right dates here. Excuse me. And also today, it's another one of these California very dirty murders. The accused murderer, Scott Peterson, it's his birthday today. And he's sitting on death row in San Quentin. The National Enquirer did an expose, so they claimed, on him, in which accused him of having sex while on death row. It's quite interesting what goes on in the prison system, if this is true. Melvin Purvis, it's his birthday. He was one of the people who was one of the early agents working for J. Edgar Hoover in the FBI, and probably seen some of those series on black and white on TV. Among the deaths today, quite interesting, Raul Julia, who starred in getting back to South America, he starred as Archbishop Romero, who was assassinated by the, I'm not sure if it was the Contras or the leftists, and Raul Julia, who was Puerto Rican Hispanic background, he died in 1994. On this day in 1957, one of the great fashion courtiers, who was also gay, Christian Dior, died. One of Henry VIII's wives died in 1537, Jane Seymour. Two or three, The Tudors is a series that's on TV right now, HBO, it's on DVD. And if you want some interesting history of England, I would suggest you catch it. It's very well done. And some of the history you probably haven't seen before, and there were several other versions of Henry VIII's and his The Tudor line, which ended with Elizabeth I. Then the Stuart line started with James I, who was the son of Mary, Queen of Scots, was also reportedly gay or bisexual, and he started the Stuart line in England, and that only lasted until James II. Looking here, we had I thought I had it here before, and I'm looking for it one more time, the debate that we were going to have, the repeat, was supposed to be Monday and it's screwed up. I know it's here, of the Kennedy-Nixon debate. It's the fourth one, probably the best one in 1916. These debates started the debates between presidential candidates that were broadcast. There have been debates before, like the Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas, the little giant. And Abraham Lincoln, that helped put him, unfortunately for him, there wasn't radio or TV at the time because he reportedly had a high, squeaky voice. Excuse me. So I'm looking here again. I've got a lot of these here, and I thought that we had it had gone up. I'm still trying to figure out this new system of I like a lot of it that's on Blog Talk here. But when I come to look for something, I can't find a bloody thing. And if you just bear with me for a minute or so, this is well worth listening to the, wait a minute, I thought I had it here. No, no. Yeah, no, we got Kennedy here. And it was here. But anyway, Nixon lost the first debate. He was sick, and it was apparent that something was wrong, and there were two other debates, and he regained his, he was a great debater. Here we go, the political animal. This is our new series, by the way. Before I start this, we're trying to more tightly focus what we're doing on the air and on print and on the internet. And so our new focus is Urban Chronicles, which will cover Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas, YouTube, AmicusVeritas.org, our blog, and, of course, the new Shadow Blog Talk Radio, Amicus Veritas. So we're going to do, let's hear this interview with, not interview, the debate, which people believe that Richard Nixon won. And this is a classic because what we're seeing today, nothing matches, in my opinion, these debates between Kennedy and Nixon.
Under the agreed rules, gentlemen, we've exhausted the time for questions. Each candidate will now have 4 minutes and 30 seconds for his closing statement. Senator Kennedy will make the first closing statement.
I said that I've served this country for 14 years. I served it in the war. I'm devoted to it. If I lose this election, I will continue in the Senate to try to build a stronger country. But I run because I believe this year the United States has a great opportunity to make a move forward, to make a determination here at home and around the world that it's going to reestablish itself as a vigorous society. My judgment is that the Republican Party has stood still here in the United States, and it's also stood still around the world. We're using about 50% of our steel capacity today. We had a recession in 58. We had a recession in 54. We're not moving ahead in education the way we should. We didn't make a judgment in 57 and 56 and 55 and 54 that outer space would be important. If we stand still here, if we appoint people to ambassadorships and positions in Washington who have a status quo outlook, who don't recognize that this is a revolutionary time, then the United States does not maintain its influence. And if we fail, the cause of freedom fails. I believe it incumbent upon the next president of the United States to get this country moving again, to get our economy moving ahead, to set before the American people its goals, its unfinished business, and then throughout the world appoint the best people we can get, ambassadors who can speak the language, not merely people who made a political contribution, but who could speak the language, bring students here, let them see what kind of a country we have. Mr. Nixon said that we should not regard them as pawns in the Cold War. We should identify ourselves with them. If that were true, why didn't we identify ourselves with the people of Africa? Why didn't we bring students over here? Why did we suddenly offer Congo 300 students last June when they had the tremendous revolt? That was more than we had offered to all of Africa the year before from the federal government. I believe that this party, Republican Party, has stood still really for 25 years its leadership has. It opposed all of the programs of President Roosevelt and others, for minimum wage and for housing and economic growth and development of our natural resources, the Hennessy Valley, and all the rest. And I believe that if we can get a party which believes in movement, which believes in going ahead, then we can reestablish our position in the world. Strong defense, strong in economic growth, justice for our people, guarantee of constitutional rights, so that people will believe that we practice what we preach. And then, around the world, particularly to try to reestablish the atmosphere which existed in Latin America at the time of Franklin Roosevelt. He was a good neighbor in Latin America because he was a good neighbor in the United States. Because they saw us as a society that was compassionate, that cared about people, that was moving this country ahead. I believe it's my responsibility as the leader of the Democratic Party in 1960 to try to warn the American people that in this crucial time we can no longer afford to stand still. We can no longer afford to be second best. I want people all over the world to look to the United States again, to feel that we're on the move, to feel that our high noon is in the future. I want Mr. Khrushchev to know that a new generation of Americans who fought in Europe and Italy and the Pacific for freedom in World War II have now taken over in the United States, and that they're going to put this country back to work again. I don't believe that there's anything this country cannot do. I don't believe there's any burden or any responsibility that any American would not assume to protect this country, protect our security, to advance the cause of freedom. And I believe it incumbent upon us now to do that. Franklin Roosevelt said in 1936 that that generation of Americans had a rendezvous with destiny. I believe in 1960 and 61 and 2 and 3, we have a rendezvous with destiny. And I believe it incumbent upon us to be the defenders of the United States and the defenders of freedom. And to do that, we must give this country leadership, and we must get America moving again.
Now, Vice President Nixon, your closing statement.
Senator Kennedy has said tonight again what he has said several times in the course of these debates and in the campaign, that America is standing still. America is not standing still. It has not been standing still. And let's set the record straight right now by looking at the record, as Al Smith used to say. He talks about housing. We built more houses in the last 7 years than in any administration, and 30% more than in the previous administration. We talk about schools. Three times as many classrooms built in the past administration and Eisenhower than under the Truman administration. Let's talk about civil rights. More progress in the past 8 years than in the whole 80 years before. He talks about the progress in the field of slum clearance and the like. We find four times as many projects undertaken and completed in this administration than in the previous one. Anybody that says America has been standing still for the last 7.5 years hasn't been traveling in America. He's been in some other country. Let's get that straight right away. Now, the second point we have to understand is this, however. America has not been standing still, but America cannot stand pat. We can't stand pat for the reason that we're in a race, as I have indicated. We can't stand pat because it is essential, with the conflict that we have around the world, that we not just hold our own, that we not keep just freedom for ourselves. It is essential that we extend freedom, extend it to all the world. And this means more than what we've been doing. It means keeping America even stronger militarily than she is. It means seeing that our economy moves forward even faster than it has. It means making more progress in civil rights than we have, so that we can be a splendid example for all the world to see of democracy in action at its best. Now, looking at the other parts of the world, South America, talking about our record and the previous one, we had a good neighbor policy, yes. It sounded fine. But let's look at it. There were 11 dictators when we came into power in 1953 in Latin America. There are only three left. Let's look at Africa. 20 new countries in Africa during the course of this administration. Not one of them selected a communist government. All of them voted for freedom, a free type of government. Does this show that communism has the bigger pull or freedom has the bigger pull? Am I trying to indicate that we have no problems in Africa or Latin America or Asia? Of course not. What I am trying to indicate is that the tide of history is on our side, and that we can keep it on our side, because we're on the right side. We're on the side of freedom. We're on the side of justice, against the forces of slavery, against the forces of injustice. But we aren't going to move America forward, and we aren't going to be able to lead the world to win this struggle for freedom if we have a permanent inferiority complex about American achievement. Because we are first in the world in space, as I've indicated. We are first in science. We are first in education. And we're going to move even further ahead with the kind of leadership that we can provide in these years ahead. One other point I would make. What could you do? Senator Kennedy and I are candidates for the presidency of the United States. In the years to come, it will be written that one or the other of us was elected, and that he was or was not a great president. What will determine whether Senator Kennedy or I, if I am elected, was a great president? It will not be our ambition that will determine it, because greatness is not something that is written on a campaign poster. It will be determined to the extent that we represent the deepest ideals, the highest feelings and faith of the American people. In other words, the next president, as he leads America in the free world, can be only as great as the American people are great. And so I say, in conclusion, keep America's faith strong. See that the young people of America particularly have faith in the ideals of freedom and faith in God, which distinguishes us from the atheistic materialists who oppose us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Both candidates have asked me to express their thanks to the networks for this opportunity to appear on this discussion. May I repeat that all those concerned in tonight's discussion have, sometimes reluctantly, followed the rules and conditions read at the outset and agreed to in advance by the candidates and the networks. The opening statements ran 8 minutes each. The closing statements ran 4 minutes, 30 seconds. The order of speaking was reversed from their first joint appearance when they followed the same procedure. A panel of newsmen questioned each candidate alternately. Each had 2.5 minutes to reply. The other had 1.5 minutes to comment. But the first discussion dealt only with domestic policy. This one dealt only with foreign policy. One last word. As members of a new political generation, Vice President Nixon and Senator Kennedy have used new means of communication to pioneer a new type of political debate. The character and courage with which these two men have spoken sets a high standard for generations to come. Surely, they have set a new precedent. Perhaps they have established a new tradition. This is Quincy Howe. Good night from New York.
Now, indeed, they did set a new tradition because we've had presidential candidate debates since then, also debates between candidates for lower offices, U.S. Senate, House of Representatives. Continuing our series, we're revamping our book, Political Animals. We're including in the new focus, The Political Animal. We will have anecdotes, other information, debates, and all of this stuff comes from the Carson Verzuola Archives, Western Public Radio, where we worked, KLWFM, where we put material together, research, also independent print research we did for Veritas USA. We're trying to be different, trying to be unique, that we are unique, and among the things that we've exposed is this judicial corruption we're hearing throughout the state. The various counties are complaining that they don't have the money to take the prisoners that are going to be released to the county jails. Well, one question has not been raised, and that is how many of these people are not guilty? They were railroaded. They were victims of kangaroo courts, corrupt prosecutors, corrupt judges. One such prisoner is U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neri. This is the 16th year he's been behind one set of bars. He was abused. Here in San Francisco, this is one of the biggest county jail scandals in the whole history of the state. Denied medical care for his broken hand, sustained in fighting off male rape from an illegal alien whose communicable disease status has been concealed. AIDS, venereal disease, gonorrhea, STD. He was a cocaine addict. He was also long connected to the state, prosecutor whose office prosecuted the case. And this guy, Kevin Vincent Ryan, committed perjury on his judicial application that when he applied for San Francisco County judge. He claimed that he lived all his life in San Francisco. However, about 5 years before that, when he got married, an apparent marriage of convenience to a wealthy family, the daughter of a wealthy family, on that marriage certificate, which we will put up, he indicates, and it's a sworn document, he was born in Alberta, Canada. Military intelligence people, the foreign intelligence people who were familiar with this case, because Juan P. Frey was an illegal alien, was not just an illegal alien, but was politically connected to the Bank of the Province of Buenos Aires, which was connected, had contact with Nazis who survived World War II. Adolf Eichmann, Scorzani, Martin Bormann, people like that, and maybe Dr. Mengele, but people who are heirs of Holocaust, of the Holocaust, whether they're Jewish or non-Semitic, and this is one of the political fictions that only one group of people were victims of the Nazis. It was equal opportunity victimization, and assets were stolen from Catholics, aristocrats, Protestants, Jews, atheists. Any place the Nazis were, they had artwork, sculpture, jewelry. Goring and these goons stole what they could, and some of that stuff may never be recovered today. And we're still discovering that there's artwork that's cropping up in collections that had been long held in secret. Excuse me. So Wednesday we will continue with the new focus, and that'll be our new focus. And so we'll have political anecdotes. We will have a reason that the United Nations, which started today in 1945, the charter was signed here in San Francisco. Why the United Nations is not in San Francisco, and it's a very prosaic reason. And you know, Mayor George Christopher, I asked him that question because he was around at the time. San Francisco's last, greatest, honest, and ethical mayor, who ran for the governorship against Ronald Reagan, but he lost. He's also a great friend of Eisenhower, and he's the one who prevented the disruption of diplomatic relations between the United States and Russia after the U-2 incident. So we'll end with our usual theme. I don't know if either Nixon or Kennedy played poker. Incidentally, there's a new book out, just came out, about Richard Nixon's wife, Pat. She's been largely ignored, a remarkable woman who stood up, who had great strength throughout all of the controversy surrounding her husband, whether it involved Checkers, the dog, or when he had to resign, and when he was a controversial congressman from California in the United States Congress, when he was doing the anti-communist investigations, and there seems to be some substance to a lot of those charges, which still resonate today, and they use the term McCarthyism. But anyway, we'll be back Wednesday at 3 o'clock, and we'll end with politics and poker, our theme for the ending.
Hey, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up some cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, like
who to
pick,
how to play,
what's the call
of love? All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paris Ray.
Well, we'll see who's traded. This is Peter Paul Brazella. We'll be back Wednesday at 3 o'clock, and this will stay up on the web. Good night.